Welcome to part two of our conversation with John Villard about the house in between. So there's not this rush of get rid of this so I can stay back in my house again. It's almost like opened up to let's take our time and investigate. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. Yep.
Okay.
That is correct.
So when you have, which is not common, obviously, when you're dealing with a home investigation, oftentimes it's let's try and get to the point of this or let's try and get to a conclusion as quickly as possible so everyone can move on with their lives peacefully. But you started digging in deeper. Tell me how you started discovering the two identities. Tell me how you discovered what you believe to be a portal in the home. How did you get from point A to point B in those cases?
So with the investigations of the house, this has been a long process. You're talking over a decade of investigating. And we started with your basic stuff. We were doing EVP sessions. We were using the most scientific stuff, equipment-wise, in the house. We put a DVR system in the house because there were, we knew the house was active. However, there were some claims in the house from a few people that had stayed there that were so dramatic. I'm like, okay, if these things are happening, let's get the house wired up and we can watch it 24 hours. And of course, a couple of those dramatic things never happen again. And that's what happens when you, whenever you have the paranormal and ghost stories, tall tales become part of it as well. So anyway, we got the house wired up. We have two DVR systems, and one of them is actually remote, so we can see the house all the time. And we actually had a historian that came in and did some research on the land, Florence, Mississippi. And some of that is in the documentary as well, and some of it is not. But we actually have a whole book inside the house right now based on the family, the Steen family, who owned a lot of land in Florence. So we kind of got some names and some people who are attached to the land. And the two entities that are there, we don't know if their names are Eric and Lily, but that is the two names that we've given them. So over the years, I always say if you're talking to a guy named Tyler that died in the house, but you're calling him George, if you start calling him George, the person, or if there's somebody who's intelligent, they may react to that name just because that's the name you're giving them. They know you're addressing them. So we coined Lily and Eric, the two entities that are attached to the land. We do believe they are there all the time. Throughout the years, I go back to the EVP and the audio and vocal tones. We have the same deep male voice throughout the years, several different times. We have the same very light female voice, intelligent, throughout the years, multiple times as well. So that's something that really intrigues me. Obviously, we have different voices, and we capture some very wonky, wild audio as well. But those two voices have never left over the years, over a decade. And it could be 6 months, 2 weeks until we hear them, but they come through a pretty good bit. Where it goes to the portal inside the house, it's fun. We do tours at the house every now and then. Before the documentary came out, we would have, and before COVID existed, we would have, 5 to 10 people come inside the house and just let them walk around, and we'd let them take part into an investigation. They get to use the gear and all that stuff, and it was fun. It was a good time for people. But one thing that I would do when a group would come in, I would have them all sit down, I would have them all stand up, and I would have each person walk throughout the house. And I would say, if any part of the house feels heavier or different, just let me know. And we would write on a piece of paper, put it on the table in front of them. And I would say 85% of the time, everybody would peg the same room in the house, which was interesting to me. But there's a part in the house, and I won't say it, I'll just let people guess if they ever come to the house, that feels a lot heavier. And that's where everybody's always drawn to. That's where the mediums have been drawn to as well. So that's where they consider the portal to be. Again, I'm still up in the air on it. I don't have any validation that there's a portal inside the house, but that's what we're being told. And based on everything that's happened over the years, it kind of makes sense, just how dramatic and how different that room in the house feels. So we started kind of focusing on that as well. And kind of diving into further investigation, if you watch the documentary, we wanted some kind of physical evidence because Alice had the lights happen to her in her back bedroom. And that's one of the most dramatic things that really set her over the top, where she reached out to me. So for years, we've been trying to recreate and capture those lights that she saw, and we have not been able to do it. There was one moment, and you see it in the documentary, that we were actually able to capture some bright lights. It almost looked like a camera shutter inside the house. but that's the closest that we've been able to capture what she saw. But the chandelier that's inside the house in the living room, that in the documentary you see goes off on command. That didn't happen until the third or fourth year that I started investigating the house. It happened on accident. I was sitting in the dining area doing an EVP session with my back to the chandelier, and I got a shock to the back of my neck, almost like a dog collar, or if like you touch an electric fence or something. And I ended up on my knees on the floor, which is very dramatic. And I didn't realize at the same time the chandelier had turned off. So in my head, I'm putting two and two together, and it's almost like the energy, the electricity from the chandelier was drained, and it went to the back of my neck and gave me a shock. So that's one of those things where you'd want it to happen again because you want to document it, but then you never want it to happen again because it kind of hurt, you know?
Sure.
And I've never had it where it shocked me again. I've never had that happen to me, but it got my attention to understand that, okay, the chandelier turned off and the switches on the wall is a turn, is a twist, turn on, turn off. So I said, okay, well, let's try to replicate that. And as you see throughout the documentary, we have had that happen on command several times. What's interesting also is the light will only go off if we're in there actually investigating. So we have cameras in there all the time, obviously, and we have the chandelier turned on. And there could be months at a time that we don't go to the house. We're just busy doing other stuff, and the chandelier will never turn off. So it's only when you're poking and prodding and trying to get a response, then the light will react. So we did that, and I was going to jump to the ball real quick, and then I'll throw it back to you. So the reason we started using a baseball inside the house is we wanted to take the focus off the chandelier and move to another area of the house to see if we focus on another object, if we could get the energy or whatever is inside the house to focus on the other object. And we chose a baseball because it's heavy, it's got stitching, so if it pivots and turns, you can see it move on camera. And obviously, if you set a baseball on your stairs, it shouldn't go anywhere unless there's an earthquake or something. And for about, I would say, 2 or 3 months, we had no response from it. And what people need to understand is, like, it's frustrating. Think about trying to do something for 2 or 3 months and it just never happens.
Yeah.
It's a long time. Those 2 or 3 months feel like forever because you feel stupid because you feel like this is just not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's a waste of time. And one of the first times the ball came down the stairs is in the documentary. It's one of my favorite shots. There's nobody inside the house, and you see a dark shadow or like the light flare, and then the ball comes down the stairs. And I remember getting that video and how excited Brad was, the other investigator in the house, and I was. It was like Christmas morning when you're 10 years old and you got the new bike that you wanted. Like, it was just so over the moon. We were so happy. We could not believe that ball came down the stairs because we tried for months for it to happen. We pleaded for the entities, the spirits inside the house, you know, focus on this, use your energy. It's going to take a lot of energy. See if you can do this. And it happened. And then obviously we started doing it and we got it to replicate itself. So it was just a really unique experience to be able to work on the chandelier and then to focus on the baseball. And now we're trying to do some other stuff. But it's almost like a spirit training ground, like you said. It's unusual that you have this highly active location where nobody lives, so you can actually, it's basically like a laboratory is what we're treating it like.
Does the longer, and this is just an opinion question, does the longer the same person investigates a home, does it almost create a relationship there between the living and the dead who haunt it, increasing the odds and likelihood of activity taking place there then?
I have to say it does. 100%. And that's my opinion. I could be totally wrong,
but sure,
based on what I have done in my career and with this house, I do believe that. And, you know, I always say, maybe I sound crazy, but I don't think I am. I do feel like I do have a relationship with the two entities that are in the house. And I'll tell you, and I don't think I've ever told this story to anybody, so this is breaking news. we wanted to get another shot of the baseball coming down the stairs. I wanted an up close shot of it coming down. I just really wanted that.
Yeah.
And we didn't have a lot of time because I was like, man, that would be so cool if they got to make the documentary, you know. But again, it goes months at a time where nothing happens.
Yeah.
So we set the ball up, and Brad, the other investigator, and I went to the house. And we were in the house saying, hey, this is really important. I really need you guys to do this. I really need you to focus on that ball. You got to do this for me. I need this. And after we ask each time, there's a keyboard that's in the house that randomly will play every now and then, but very rarely. And it would go off every time we would ask a question. It was like four times. It got to the point where we just stopped recording. We're like, I'm not even going to send this to Kendall because this is ridiculous. Like, it looks like this is like fake. I don't know what to do.
Sure.
But it was literally like, they were like, I got it. We got it. We got you. And a day and a half later, not one ball, but three balls come down the stairs. I swear to God, like, it's the craziest thing. And it's like, I don't know what to make of that because the ball takes forever sometimes. But like, we were in there pleading, saying, hey, this is time sensitive. I need this to happen. Please make this happen. And it's like, not one, not two, but three balls come down the stairs. I'm like, this is nuts. Like, this is like the stuff that they put you in the loony bin for, but like, this is really happening right now.
Yeah.
So I do feel that we do have a relationship with them. And, you know, the house in between that we filmed, it was not a long time to film. And Steve doesn't live here. Kendall doesn't live here. So we had to get together and we were, you know, renting our equipment. So there was a tight time crunch on everything we were doing. And if you watch the documentary and you watch the last 10 minutes or last 20 minutes, you know what I'm talking about. For the dramatic things that happened while they were inside the house, I always say that's like the paranormal Powerball. Like, for something that dramatic to happen to Kendall. And Kendall is amazing. He's our cinematographer, and he makes the film look like it does. Him and his wife, Vera, they're so talented, so honored to work with both of them. But he's filmed with ghost hunters, and so he's been to like 800 locations across the country, all over the world.
Yeah.
So not much gets to him, but I just remember seeing him tiptoe by that ball when it came down next to him and how excited he was. So to see him get that hyped up after all he's done was so cool to see. And then to see Steve trying to rack his brain. If you go watch the last few minutes of the documentary, when this happens, you see Steve and looking at the monitor, and it's almost like a wheel, like a little mouse on a wheel. You can see his eyes turning, trying to figure out what's happening. So Steve is so well respected. He is so hard to get anything past. We actually call it the Steve filter, because there's a lot of stuff that happened while we were filming, but if it doesn't match the Steve filter, it's not going to make the documentary. So for him to sit there and just be perplexed like that, it was really cool to see in such a short amount of time. So I really feel like the entities, the spirits in the house were working for us while we were filming.
You had mentioned earlier about the portal being in the house and the energy almost changing on a regular basis. I understand you have the two that seem to be resident energies or spirits that roam the house. But with the portal, I know that oftentimes equates to, well, a lot of shifts quite dramatically. What have you experienced or what have others experienced that you're aware of where it shifts the energy quite dramatically, either to a negative or to a positive direction? What have you experienced there in your investigating over a decade?
Yeah, great question. For one example, I was in the house one night, and when you go in, it's different. So whenever you get to investigation mode in the house, sometimes the energy just feels a lot different. And I'm not a medium. I don't claim to be. What I mentioned earlier, when I can hear voices, and there's actually a example of that in the documentary as well, where I hear something, I react to it. So what I call it is a peek through the veil. I'm able to tough sometimes, but I can't hone it. Or I don't know how to hone it. So whenever you go into the house, the energy feels a lot heavier sometimes. And we've gotten some really different kind of voices, some negative in the house, but we've definitely have some more aggressive spirits. I've actually been scratched on the back of my neck before. That's only happened once in the over decade that I've been investigating. So that was very, very unusual. Shocking, actually. I've only had that happen to me a couple times in my career. So for that to happen inside that house was confusing to me, because again, I feel like I do have a relationship with the entities and spirits there. And so that was different. But through the process, I would say there's times that I've been inside the house where you legitimately feel a little scared, like not welcome in the house, which is unusual because we come there all the time. And then there's other times where it just feels calm and clear and just a lot more relaxed. I mean, there's times where I've been inside the house investigating, and after a couple of hours, I just needed to get out of the house. I didn't want to be there. And that's unusual for me. And it doesn't happen all the time, but I just associate that with whatever is there at that moment, whether it's just an aggressive entity or something that may be more dramatic. Or I've gone in there before and just felt so sad that I needed to get out of the house. So there's different range of emotions, and I don't go in looking for anything. I just base that off of the different, the shifts, as you said, with the portal.
Sure. Let me ask you, about portal, and this is all obviously conjecture of your own opinion. How is a portal like that? How do you believe a portal was created in that house, being that it was built in the 90s? We know the history of who's lived there and such, and you've heard her stories. How does a portal like that come to be on a piece or in a home like that? Or is that portal more connected to the land that home sits on than it is a specific room necessarily in the home?
Right. Yeah. I don't think it has anything associated with the house at all. I think it's 100% the land. And if you look at fault lines and ley lines, mm-hmm. Florence is on a lot of the ley lines that are associated. We actually looked into that a little bit of that is in the documentary. Mm-hmm. And then we also looked at like limestone and stuff like that as well, almost like a battery, a supercharge.
Sure.
For active locations, which if you're in the field, you kind of know that association. So there is limestone around that area, and the ley lines are actually very unique. And the town itself of Florence is also unique in itself, since it burned twice, the entire town. So they rebuilt it. And so the historian who's actually in the documentary, who's like 98 years old, she's awesome. She has lived there her whole life. And the portion where Alice's house is, all the records were burned in the fire. I don't know if it was the first or second fire. So what used to be there, we don't really know. There's a cemetery up the road, a huge cemetery, 0.5 miles up the road. So what used to be there, we have no clue. But to answer your questions, why the portal? I think it's definitely associated with the land, and I do think it's the way it could be something with the limestone or the ley land, where however it's set.
Can an investigator, a human, or someone with a specific ability, can the living choose to close a portal if they are rightfully equipped to do so? When it's like this in someone's home, albeit they don't live there anymore, if she said, you know what, I do want to go live there again, I'm okay with the other two spirits, but that portal is the thing that I have no control over. And I'm not saying she said this, I'm just, throwing it out there.
Right.
Could someone go in there? Do you believe someone could go in there and stop that portal, shut that portal down, or make this home livable? Or are we just completely at the mercy of whatever these things are going to do, because they're beyond our power and ability to control?
Great question. And I don't have the answer, but do I believe it? I mean, look what I do. We chase ghosts.
It's all opinion.
Right. So do I believe that could be possible? I do. Have I heard of instances where people have gone in and tried to cleanse somewhere and stop a portal or shut it down? I have. Has it been fully successful? In the majority of the stories that I've heard and people that I've talked to, they have not been successful. So I don't know. But for the majority of times that I've heard something associated with what we're dealing with at Alice's house, that's been attempted, but nothing has been truly successful.
Yeah. It's just almost like, well, we can try it, but no,
right. Yeah.
No guarantees. I mean,
and it's like, there's a million questions that you can go into, and I have my own theories and methods that I do. And what's cool about the field is, like you said, there's a lot of things that we're still trying to figure out. And just like doctors were back in the day, like you mentioned, we're doing the best that we can with the ability and the technology that we have right now. And this is just totally off topic, but just going over that, we got into a whole conversation. I remember filming the house. It was Steve, Kendall, myself, and Brad. And we had captured an EVP inside the house. It was just Kendall and I. And it said, I'm in the woods, which is cool because it's a full sentence. And we were focused on the land, which is kind of cool that EVP was saying, I'm in the woods. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of accurate. So we played it for Steve when he got there. And Steve is very careful in audio because there's so many things that can affect. And, his name and reputation's on the line. So I understand why he was doing his due diligence and being very careful. And we realized that the EVP sounded very similar to Kendall's voice, but Kendall didn't do the, he didn't say that. It was Kendall and I inside the house. Kendall was messing with the camera and I was sitting in a chair. And that's when we captured the EVP because we had the video of it while I was recording. So we have the audio and the video. And we got into the conversation of doppelgangers.
Yeah.
And so I asked the question, so, you know, if an if a spirit or entity is using our energy, because you've heard that they can drain batteries, they can, you know, this, that, and the other, if they pull the power from the chandelier and they're using us, they're using our energy, doesn't it make sense that if you capture an EVP and it sounds like your voice, wouldn't that be a doppelganger experience? So I asked that question, and that's kind of an interesting conversation that we have. So I've been asking people in the field what they thought about that.
As always, it ends up, you end up having more questions than answers on all this. Let me ask you this, just kind of in closing. Does, and this is your perspective because we're not asking the owner this directly, but does the owner want the home to be eradicated of the spirits? Or is she happy with it being kind of the investigation grounds that it's become?
She loves her house, and I think that at this point, she's retired, recently retired, and she loves the place that she's living now, and she likes having the house. I think the biggest thing that she wants from the house now is for us to be able to push forward and truly capture something groundbreaking. So to answer your question, I think she likes it being used as a spirit training ground, as mm-hmm. we've coined it, and she's excited to be part of the process, and it's cool to see her story that she was scared to bring to light has now given so many people so much joy. And it's neat to see the people who watch the documentary and really take a lot away from it. And it's neat to have the scientific aspect and the supernatural, because whether you're into the paranormal or not, I think this documentary is just a really good story. And the people who are in it are so authentic. You know, even to the guy who was doing the level of the house, he goes outside, puts a big dip in his mouth and spits. You know, these are not actors. These are straight Southern real people. But she wants to do something positive for the field, and she truly believes that there's something more underlying with her house and the land. And if you watch the documentary, you see that we brought in some cadaver dogs, and we got some hits on that. So there's a lot more questions, and this house is like a puzzle. And every time I feel like we find a piece, it's like three more pieces go missing.
Sure.
So it's ever evolving. And I have a short attention span, but this house has kept me engaged over a decade. And it's actually kept me in the paranormal field. There was times where I just kind of got burned out and was going to step away for a while. But then something dramatic would happen at the house that would wrangle me back in. So I attribute Alice and the house and all this to keep me in the paranormal field. And it's truly incredible the things that we've been able to capture. And I'm so happy that people are enjoying the story and truly loving the house in between.
If somebody wants to see the documentary, where do they go to see it?
So easy, just go to thehouseinbetween.com. It tells you all 26 streaming platforms that it's on right now. And if you have Amazon Prime, this is pretty cool. It's actually free to stream right now.
Cool.
And if you go watch The House in Between, we do ask for you to give it a rating, good or bad, is whatever you want to do, but leave us a review and just tell us what you think. But Yeah, if you got Amazon Prime right now, it is free to stream. And if you go to thehouseinbetween.com, we got some really cool shirts and hoodies, so get you some swag and promote.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with John about The House in Between. A big thank you to him for joining us on the program today. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.